Hey, I'm Stevie.
What's up? I'm Monty J.
And you're listening to the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast,
where we take a deep dive with your favorite contemporary romance authors,
asking them questions about everything from their writing process to their reading habits, plus so much more.
Join us as we help you find your next bookshelf boyfriend.
What's up, bookworms? It's your host, MJ. Unfortunately, I'll be flying solo today. Stevie is not feeling very well, and, you know, didn't get a lot of sleep last night. So hoping that she gets to feeling better very soon, and she should be back for the next podcast episode. But for right now, it's just you and me and a little bit of book boyfriends. It's going to be a very intimate time for us. Very excited. I feel like we needed this alone time. I'm just kidding. Mr. Already. A few things. I'm trying to give you guys updates on like what and how you've done. My newest book came out, The Truth We Burn. So if you're looking for something dark romance, you should definitely go check that out. I just got in the mail Bully God, which is an anthology with some of my favorite authors on it. My girls, R. Holmes, C.L. Matthews, and Holly Renee are on that bad boy. So, you know, I had to support that shit. Super excited. I hear it's so good. It's basically like retellings of Greek gods, and y'all know how much I love a good retelling. That's about it on my reading list. I don't think I've read anything else. I feel like I should look on my Kindle to like let you guys know if I've read anything. I mean, I feel like I've read things, but I feel like I've already told you guys about them. I'll keep you updated on Bully God. I'll let you know how that goes. Oh my God. I read recently, A.R. Breck, who we had on the podcast, has a series called The Four Nightmares of Castle Point, and it is so good. Definitely need to check that out. It's not a reverse harem, but it's like a PNR dark romance. It's so good. You guys would really like it. And that's about it. As of recent, but yeah, I will keep you guys updated with how Bully God goes. And yeah, today we have a very special guest that I'm really excited to talk to. I love her books. I've read her Virtues and Lies series. So we're going to go ahead and read her intro and hop on over there. Alexandra Silva is a USA Today bestselling author of contemporary romance and romantic suspense. Her stories are raw, heartfelt, and sexy, with flawed, dirty talking and sexy as hell heroes and feisty heroines that give them a run for their money. Alex is a tequila-loving book hoarder. She lives in London with her boys and man, as well as their three cats. Salted caramel coconut lattes are her real weakness, along with dark taboo romance and angst-heavy new adult reads. She blames the classics and nutty English teacher for her obsession with books and fiction. Come rain or shine, with either coffee or wine in hand, you will find her with a nose stuck in a book and her head in the clouds. So let's go on over and chat with Miss Alexandra Silva. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bookshelf Boyfriends podcast. Alexandra Silva, welcome, welcome.
Hello.
All the way from, you know, across the way, across the pond.
London. Oh, goodness.
What time is it there for you right now?
Six. So it's just, you know, Friday evening, you know, what else can I do? It's not like I can have a drink and unwind. So, you know, might as well talk to you.
I know. I'm basically like a shot of liquor, pretty much. I mean, honestly, with the way that I act, so it's totally okay. So super excited to have you on the podcast. I'm a huge fan of your books. Stevie is a huge fan of your books. Obviously, I told them in the intro that Stevie won't be here, but both a huge fan, and we've been really excited to have you on. So I guess we'll just hop right on into questions about your book specifically. We are going to talk about the Imperfect Heart series, which is made up of four books. And the fourth book will be out the day readers are listening to this. So what is your inspiration behind the series?
This is really tricky because it was my first ever foray. Not my first ever foray into publishing, let's say. So it was a bit like it started the Quincy and Jamie story. Mm-hmm. And I sort of had Quincy's character in my head, and then Jamie sort of came along, and I was like, oh yeah, you two will go well together. So I wrote their story, and yeah, that's how it all happened. And you know, along the way, I just sort of really fell in love with the side characters. So Dorian got her got two books actually, because her story is a duet.
Yep.
And now Willow's getting hers 3 years later. I've had readers ask me, when is she getting her story? We've been waiting. But you know, after Dorian's, I don't know, I just sort of needed a break into something different, which was meant to be something lighter, but turned out to be a lot darker. So yeah, it just took 3 years for me to finish the Virtues and Lies series and to get back to Willow. But it was 3 good years, because I think in that time my writing developed quite a bit. And yeah, I think, you know, I feel like I've done this story justice. I really like Willow and Rory, and I'm a huge fan of MMA.
Oh, me too. Me too.
And, you know, it's so really Rory was inspired by...
Oh no, I'm so nervous.
Well, he was inspired by a few people, but mostly Conor McGregor, because
he is just a law unto himself.
And I don't care what anyone else says. I know he's wacky and a nutcase, but you've got to give him credit. He's got big balls.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. And listen, those are our favorite book characters. Like, while they may seem very, like, you know, out there in real life, those are our favorite book characters, are the guys who act like that. So, I mean, I also love Conor McGregor, so it's fine. It's totally fine.
Oh, I just adore him.
Also, I feel like it's like similar to me, where like I started writing contemporary romance and then was like, oh, I'm going to do a next generation for the series. And then I was like, just kidding. I think I want to write dark romance for the remainder of my time. And then people are like, oh, are you going to do the next generation for these kids? And I'm like, I guess you're just going to have to wait 3 years if that's how, you know, it's just not there right now. But I think that giving yourself time to really like do the story justice, so that, you know, you weren't writing something you weren't passionate about. And I feel like readers will appreciate that more than, you know, not having to wait.
Absolutely. You know, for me, I got to the end of the Virtues and Lies series, and that was quite heavy. The each book was just heavy.
So good though, but so good.
And it was so dark as well at points. And once I finished Freddie's book, I was like, I need something light to clear, like, you know, cleanse my palate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Willow's book that called to me. And it was, and when I started writing it, this is the funny thing. I was like, I'm going to keep it light. I'm going to keep it like really light, really fun. And it's just going to be straightforward. Shortest I've done, because every time I tell anyone I'm going to write, you know, anything below 80k, they laugh at me, because I'm a wordy bitch. Sorry.
I can say that. You can absolutely cuss on this podcast. I cuss so much on this podcast.
But I, you know, I like my detail, and I just write how I think. So yeah, this was meant to be light and short, 50k, and it's, I think, 85k now. But it was like, I started off with a really light story, and then I got about 70% of the way in, and I was just like, I love that it's light. I like that it's funny. Mm-hmm. And I just liked it, but I was like, it's not blowing me away, because it's missing me.
I understand.
So, you know, halfway through, I spoke to one of my alpha readers, and I was like, I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but there's got to be a plot twist in there somewhere. Something has got to go wrong.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, things went wrong, and it got a bit suspensey. But I like suspense. You know, I think it just sort of balanced it out for me.
Yeah.
Which is like, it was meant to be a rom-com and now it's a contemporary romance and it's all good. But I needed that because, like C.S. Lewis always said that tragedy is so much more important than love because it's what harnesses the human being inside us to be able to feel what other human beings are feeling. Tragedy is what gives us compassion. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that in my writing. When tragedy happens, my characters just come together and it's like, yes, I feel this. Yes.
I'm going to steal that from you. I'm going to tell people. I'm going to be like, a C.S. Lewis quoted by Alexandra said that. I'm stealing it from you. That's so good. I agree 100%. I always say that, like, so I predominantly love dark romance mostly because of that reason, right? Because there's just a lot of tragedy in dark romance. But if I ever read contemporary romance, that you got to give me some type of sad, like somebody's got to die. Somebody has to like go through the ringer. Like, where are the tears? Like, make me cry. I know.
If there isn't something really sad happening, someone has to die.
Absolutely. Or something traumatic has to happen, you know, like some car accident or something crazy, you know.
See, I always get told that I'm sick because I enjoy the tears and I enjoy the pain. But I think that's the most beautiful part of it because I like my books hot. You know, I like there to be a lot of steam. Smut is great, but I like something else in that because I feel that it can be very one-dimensional. Just to have the smut. And I think tragedy and pain with that can, it's what gives it dimension in a way.
Yeah.
No offense to people people that write rom-coms. I think, you know, there is a talent in that in itself because you have to be one hell of a cheery person to do it.
I could never. Not me.
Tried. I've really tried. I write rom-coms with Sophie and the only reason why they come out rom-com-ish is because Sophie is so light. She calls herself the light and fluffy to my dark and dirty.
Oh my God, that's me and Stevie. That's me. Literally though, that's me and Stevie. But I agree. I think that it gives it some type of dimension. And plus like, I think that they're some of the best scenes to write. Like when you're writing like sad scenes like that, it's just like, oh, the emotion I am feeling right now is just.
Do you ever get to the point where you're like, you're writing it and it just hits you and then you start crying and then you're like, oh my God, this is like gold. And you're like, the more you cry, the more you know it's good.
Yeah. You're like, oh my God, if I'm crying, they're going to cry 100%.
Yes. And I love that. I absolutely. The best yet is when you have some sort of music playing as you're writing that. And then every time you listen to that song or that music piece, and then you're like,
think oh of that God. Scene.
Yes. And it takes you back and you like you get a bit emotional.
I do this, I do it all the time. I do it all the time. All the time. So book one in this series is called No One But You. And this is Jamie and Quincy's story, which is a second chance romance. It's one of my favorite tropes. So what surprised you the most when you were writing their book?
It was my first book, so it was a bit of a journey for me. I had a lot to learn. But really, it was just, I was really surprised at how easy it was to pour myself into their story. I've been asked lots of times, you know, I'm not really giving much away because this actually happens after the tragedy. So in this case, Quincy goes through a stillbirth, and I've had people, friends, read that book, and they go, so did that happen to you? And I have said, no, it didn't. I've never had a stillbirth, but it was just one of those things that really, it surprised me how easy it was to put myself in Quincy's shoes for that story, and I think it was part of the reason why I loved her so much, because there's some sort, like, it's almost cathartic when you put yourself within a broken person's soul.
Yeah.
And then you can just see it unravel and the places it takes you. I think that's like the most touching thing about doing what we do.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's, I mean, I do like a lot of research, even on like the smallest of things, because I tell people all the time, like, I've lived 1,000 lives in like the amount of time that I have, you know, been an author. Like, I've been a hockey player, and I've been like, you know, somebody that has bipolar disorder, and another person who has like struggled with self-harm, because like when you're writing these characters, you genuinely have to, like, you know, in your head, like, embody the emotion and like the turmoil and all the things that they go through, so that you know how they will react to a certain sentence, or like what another character will say or do. And it's a very like emotional, taxing thing, but it's also very beautiful, because I feel like authors are like the queens and kings of being empathetic, because we have to like be there with you, you know, like we really have to like put ourselves in those shoes in order for readers to believe that these characters are actually going through it too. So I think that's like, if you can do that as an author, that's my favorite. I'm like, you are talented. You are the most amazing author ever. It's just like,
one of the things that I really struggled with whilst I was writing the darker series was that each one of those books had a really sort of emotional dark point.
Yeah, yeah.
And every time that I wrote those books, for, you know, between the 2 to 6 months that I was writing them, I was living that. And I found that as the story got darker, I would feel like I was in that dark place. Yeah, to the point where, like, sometimes I needed to step away and just remind myself that I am not that character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Step away, take a breath, lighten up. And I think it's why I went into Willow's story after that series, because it was a breath of fresh air in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, yes, I love that. I love that. So book two in the series is For You. This is Philip and Dorian's story, and this is a brother's best friend. So story was a roller coaster of emotions. Like, we were all over the emotional spectrum in this book, which I literally love. Like I said, if I read contemporary romance or anything like that, I need it. I need that in order to keep me like intrigued. So I really loved it in this one. So what was it like writing this story for you, being on that emotional roller coaster with them?
I think for me, it was, you know, there's a lot of puppy love in that yeah. book. In fact, you know, that book is puppy love, because, yeah, you know, it's not so much, it's a romance because of the second book that comes along for it. Otherwise, it's a tragedy, yeah, in a way. And I mean, if you, pardon me, if you read No One But You, you already know what happens in that book. So when I released it, I was a bit like, oh my god, everyone already knows what's going to happen. You know, they know every twist, but it was like, when you actually see it firsthand, it's completely different. And I say to this day that Dorian is one of my favorite characters, and it is because she goes through so much pain in that book. And yeah, you think about, you know, how something so innocent, you know, you know, her first love, something so that's meant to be so nice, it just became something very dark for her.
Yeah. Is the first love so nice, though? Listen, wow. On a real level, I want to do a poll of people who actually are like, yes, my first love was so like just lovely and nice. Like, I really want to do a poll, because I know for a fact that mine was not. Like,
no, absolutely. Do you know what? You say that, and that's absolutely true. Because I just don't, yeah, like, my first experience was shit.
Literally.
And you know, like, so if the guy was on fire, I wouldn't pee on him to put him out. Like, that's how much, just no.
And we all have that first love story. Like, we all have that one where we're like, no, like, I would bury him if possible. Like, I cannot.
That's why I really loved writing Dorian's book, because it was just, For You, it was like everything that you don't really get in a romance. It was like, they're real.
Yeah.
Stuff.
So know? Is that why you decided, is that what led you to, like, when you wrote the second book, is that what led you to write her story out that way?
Well, I was meant to write one whole book, and that was just meant to be For You and Someone Like You was meant to be one book. And like I said, I'm wordy. And For You, which was meant to be the novella, was like almost 80K.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like for the story to work, it needed a lot of emotional development and investment. So I was like, I'm not going to rush it. So I did that. And then Someone Like You was just about putting Dorian's soul back together. Because I think, you know, losing that first love and then having all the responsibilities that she ended up with as a single mum. I know it sounds like a spoiler, but everyone knows what happens. If you read No One But You, you'll know what happens.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of, you go from one hopeful thing of that first love and being so invested in someone to losing that, and then having to give yourself to another love.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think in her case, it was a matter of she used her child and that love to bandage over the hurt that she had with losing her first love, if that makes sense. So it was really important for me, in especially in the second book, because it's, again, it's a brother's best friend. She's got a person there. She clearly knows what she likes.
Something like that, yeah.
But, you know, she needed someone that had as much of a past as her, even if it wasn't a romantic past.
Yeah.
So I really liked that with Jake, because he came in and he was the fun guy. And, you know, everyone loves it when the fun guy turns around and he's not so fun.
No, yeah, exactly. And I think that's super. I think it's super interesting. I feel like, you know, you definitely could have just had it focus on like Jake and Dorian, like their book, right? And had maybe like flashbacks of like Dorian's past. But no, you were like, no, I want you to feel this shit. I want you to literally. So you gave us a whole book. And we felt all those emotions for Dorian before. And I think it just shows the beauty in that, like, you know, losing love. I don't believe that you could ever really lose love, right? Mm-hmm. Because like, if somebody dies, that love doesn't just like magically like disappear. Absolutely into not. The earth, right? So it's still there. It's still breathing and living. It just has nowhere to go at the moment, right? And so I don't believe you lose it. I just think that, you know, love is like a continuing like cycle, like water. It just like flows throughout people. Yep. Always. It never goes anywhere. And I think it showed like the beauty of like finding that again and like realizing that for yourself.
Absolutely. And I think there is a part in Someone Like You where Dorian makes a point of saying, you know, I don't regret what I had. And I will always love that.
Mm-hmm.
But something new has come along.
Yeah.
Something bigger. It's grown into something monumental, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's the beauty as well, like of second chance romances, regardless of whether it's, you know, with the same person or a second chance of finding love altogether.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of it, because you see something that's been broken and that is the root of so much pain, and it just develops into something beautiful again. And I like that personally. It's one of the things that I love the most about romance.
I also love that. It's one of my favorites.
Because it's hope.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Hope. I think hope at its most basic human need.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
You know, from a very young age, you know, from my grandparents even, you know, I was always told, you know, if you've got hope, you've got life.
Exactly. Oh my God, that's, you know? So sweet. I love it so much. Oh my God, there are so many quotable moments in this podcast. So Monday, book 4 releases, which is Fighting for Fate, and this is Roy and Willow's story, and you give all the tropes. Like you did, you pulled out no stops with this one, okay? So what can readers expect from this book?
Well, I'm going to start off with this. It is my take on Grumpy Sunshine,
okay,
but in reverse, because everyone's sort of like, you go in and you expect Rory to be like this big alpha, aggressive, you know, macho rump.
Mm-hmm.
But he is an alpha, and he definitely pushes to get what he wants. Yeah. And he does not relent. But at the same time, where Willow has been so beaten down in previous relationships, he is like the biggest source of sunshine for her, because he just says what he's so straightforward. He says what he wants, mm-hmm. and he means what he says.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's something that she needs, and that brings the fun back into her life as well, because yeah. he's just so carefree in a way. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's got, you know, he's got his ghosts, he's got his closet full of them. But, you know, that's the beauty of the story, is, you know, three-dimensional characters.
Exactly.
There's pain somewhere. But that's what I really loved about it, the grumpy sunshine aspect, but twisted in bits, you know, so that it wasn't your usual round of mill grumpy guy with, you know, a super sweet yay, and, you know, fluff girl.
Yeah.
You know, she was definitely the yeah, she's yeah. a bitch.
Listen, I love characters, so it's fine. Those are some of my favorite characters.
But I also like, again, you get to see a lot of the background characters within this book, and you get a lot of steam. And they have their oops moment, which is quite funny. You know, they have what I like to call condom gate. And actually, oh my God. You know, I was talking to a few people about it, and they're like, oh yeah, that's happened to me. I was like, what? How? No, it's never happened to me. How has it happened to you? But yeah, I like the mix of the comedy as well with, you know, just that it's got a bit of angst in. It's not angst heavy like some of my other ones, but it does have some angst in. So, you know, it's a cocktail of emotions.
I love this cocktail. Okay, I'm excited. People should be excited for it. So if you could pick one of your books or series to become a movie or a TV show, which would you choose, and who would you cast as the lead roles? This is Stevie's favorite question to ask authors, right? Because like it's so hard. It's like my least favorite question. Cause when I get asked that question, I'm like, I mean, shit, I don't know.
How can you pick out of your favorite child? That's like exactly. saying you have three kids, three boys. Which one's your favorite? Well, I don't know. I mean, I made three of them. How can I, you know, have a favorite? I don't know. I've only got two series, so I'm going to go. Oh, no, I feel terrible. I'll go with the Virtues
and Vices. Don't think about it. Don't think about it as in like, what's your favorite? Think about what you make for good TV.
Virtues and Lies, definitely.
I agree. I want to see Freddie on the screen so bad. It's not even funny.
Do you know what? Two of my favorite scenes in his story are the belt scene and then the lake scene.
Shut up. The belt scene sent me to the moon. To the moon!
So that was like my favorite. Like, but yeah, I Virtues and Lies wins, just because it's got a bit of everything. Like, you've got the really heavy shit that's dark.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like these moments of where somehow there's just crude humor in there.
Yeah.
Which I love. I mean,
I love for me, dark humor. That's my favorite form of humor.
Exactly. But yeah. I also find like that sometimes you just need that. So I'm one of those people, right? If you told me that someone died, I would struggle not to laugh, because I get so shocked. And then I'm like, I don't know how to deal with this. And I'm just like, I'm terrible. My first go-to reaction is laughter,
because
everything else is just like too much to, you know. So yeah, it's got that, and it's got all the action. I mean, my Google history is appalling because of that of that series.
Oh my
you God. Know
it's also ridiculous.
Do you
have like a cast in mind, like for the people that you would cast? or like any like actors that you like picture?
I want to say I do, but not really. Like, yeah. The one character that like I really based on someone, and it was just because I saw this one photo and he was all brooding and I was like, oh my god. And it was Christopher in book two, and it was Mitchell Wick. And
I gotta look him up right now. Hold up.
Know him. He's on lots of covers.
Oh, Lord Jesus. Yes. Okay. Yes, I know.
There was this one image of him, and it was so just the lighting. It was just a mood. The image was just a mood. And I was like, yes, that is Christopher. So that is the one so character. I know. I shouldn't be allowed.
It's illegal. It should be illegal. There's no way.
Jeez. Well, I spent like 4 months writing this book, and every day I got to sit there and I had an excuse to have him on my screen. And I've got two screens when I'm writing, one for my Pinterest board and my research, because I research everything down to a T, to the point where sometimes I have to go back and I'm like, is this too much detail? Because really, if the character is really in the moment and thinking this, they're not thinking about all this detail. So, and then I get myself into this thing where I'm like, is it too much? Is it not enough? What am I doing? Oh my god.
I'm on Zillow all the time when I'm like building houses for these characters. I'm on Zillow all the time. I'm like, oh my god, but I need this house to look like what I'm saying it looks like. And then basically what I'll do is I'll scroll through Zillow, and you know how the realtor will like give you a briefing of like what the house is, dude. I'm like, okay, so this is what it's gonna look like. This is it. I like this.
Yeah. Oh my god, that is exactly what I do. I just love that. Also, do you ever have, like, you know, on your Pinterest board, you have like this one thing, this one image that comes up, and it just inspires a whole scene? So absolutely. When then you're writing that scene, that image is just there, and you're just like zooming in, and you're doing this, and I'm like, I think I've become obsessed with this one image, just for this like scene.
I saw this one scene on Pinterest, right? I have this thing when I'm writing where I have to wait for like these like little clicks. That's what I call them. Like it could be like one sentence or like one metaphor or like a line or like a subject matter that I put in, but it clicks in my brain and I'm like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. So this is what's going to make it go full circle kind of thing. And so I was on Pinterest and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do for like the rest of the book, and I needed like a climatic like moment. I call it like a game, because in this series I'm doing, like each of them kind of have like a different game that they like involve themselves in, and I needed like a game. And I saw this Pinterest image of like a key dangling from like just this little thread underneath this building, and it was like swaying, it was like very foggy, and I was like, ooh, I was like, I'm gonna write a whole scene based on this one key. And I did. I wrote two chapters based on that whole, just that one key. I just got the whole thing from it. I'm like, you need help. You need help.
Well, with Arabella, like the way that their story actually came about was, so I did the board for Burn, and I was literally just scrolling through. And you know, when it asks you if there's more pins or something like that, the bottom, you go to the bottom and says add more pins or whatever. And there was one image, and it was just of a woman's legs, and she's walking in these white heels, and there's just blood running down her legs. And that's how Arabella's story came about.
I'm obsessed. I love it.
It was like, another character that I have, and obviously Arabella. Just give me 1 second. What do you want? No. Away. Come on.
Hello.
Sorry.
You're fine.
So Arabella's character. And at the time, I think I was binging Rain.
I love Rain.
So Madeline. Oh, what's her name? Madeline something. She's Australian.
Are you talking about the main character?
Yes.
Yeah. I love her.
So she's my Arabella.
Oh, that's good. Listen, obviously I know that this is like a controversial statement when it comes to Rain, but I was team Bash all the way. I'm so sorry. I realized, but I was team Bash. Bash would have never done half the shit to her. I would have, I don't care. I don't care. I love him.
I should have stood by her side the whole time. Like, Francis was just the wettest blanket at points. And
especially in the beginning. Especially in the beginning. Like, the shit.
He was just, you obviously like her, so just go for it. Like, I just hated it that he was such a mama's boy. And it was like, yes, mommy, yes, mommy. I was like, please, someone slap some sense into this guy.
For real, though. So I was like Team Bash the whole way. So what's next for you in 2022?
Well, I'm having a baby.
Congratulations.
Well, that's sort of like what the big next. I'm working around that. But Sophie, like everyone knows who Sophie is. Sophie Blue, I co-write with a lot. So we put together A Small Town World, and it's basically set in a coastal town in North Carolina, and it's basically a small town and it's got big secrets.
Okay.
So every story, and
I live in a small town in North Carolina, so I'm like, I'm interested.
Well, but it's like everyone knows everything, and it's not just characters that live in the town. You have a lot of like rich people coming through because it's like a Hamptons type town.
Yeah.
So the rich folk come in and stir the shit up. And so we've been really lucky to have all these amazing authors write in this world. So we've got 24 authors so far. That's and
awesome.
We're all releasing a book within the next 18 months. So my book, The Hardest Fall, is coming out in end of June. And it's an age gap. wait for it. You'll never guess what it is. Brother's best friend.
Oh my God. Listen, it's fine. I love that trope. So it's fine.
So it's brother's best friend, secret baby. And yeah, I'm currently writing their story. So Xander and Luciana are just like right there. And I love them. I love them because he's, so they get together at her brother's wedding. And it's like a one night stand because he has to leave, but he leaves basically without telling her he's going. So he literally sleeps with her one night and then fucks off.
Oh, and
so she's like so angry, and then you've got all of these things that happen and he comes back. And obviously I'm at the point where they're not friends, but they, you know, they still want to fuck.
Yeah. They're acquaintances with chemistry.
Yeah. So I'm really excited for that. And then I have a co-write with Sophie as well within the world, which is, we're both really, really big F1 fans. Like
F1 we drivers. Are.
Yeah. Like F1 we
watch. Drivers. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the season starts in March, and every week that there's a race, the two of us will be sat in front of the TV. if we can't watch it together, we will be on WhatsApp messaging each other. And yeah, so like we are F1 whores.
I love it.
And so we're writing an F1 book within the Silver Bell Shore world.
Yeah.
I've got I'm really excited for this actually, because my next dark book's called The Ripper. Oh. And it's a retelling of the Jack the Ripper legend.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited because it's like going sort of back to the virtues and lies world, but not quite. You're going to see like a character or two from that world. But I'm just, I can't not wait to get in. I'm just like, oh
my God, that's how I feel every moment of my life when I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to write this next book. And then it gets here and I'm like, oh God, I can't wait to write the next book.
Yeah. Like, I have this whole thing where I'm writing a book and I'm really into it. And then I hit like the 70% mark. And then I get this other idea and I'm like, oh. And I'm going on Pinterest and I'm making a playlist. And
oh my God, I do the same thing. And I have to make a title.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I'm already planning out the cover for that book.
Yeah.
Even though I haven't written it. and I don't even have a blurb, but it's fine because I have this whole thing in my head and I just want to do it. And then I'm looking at my screen going, but I need to finish this. But look, this character saying, it's just a nightmare. I have it every single time, guaranteed, every time.
I do the same thing. I can't help it. I feel you. All right, so we're going to shift gears and move to writing questions. So are you like a plotter, a pantser, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. If I plot a solo, 5% in and it all goes out the window.
Understandable.
So, like, you know how you were saying you have the click moments? Mm-hmm. That's how I plot. I start off with where I want to be, and I know where I want to go and where I want to end, but away, please. Thank you. Sorry.
You're fine.
So I have those moments where I get a sentence in my head, one of the characters says something, or sometimes like I'm watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have, I don't know if you watch like murder mysteries or crime,
I am crime documentaries? Well, okay, obviously you don't know me like that, but listen, that is the only thing I watch on television.
But do you ever have a moment where you're watching that and something happens, there's a twist in that story and you're like, oh my God, that's just solved my whole problem.
Yes.
This needs to happen. And sometimes it's not even like what's happened on the TV.
Yeah. It's just like...
It just something clicks and you're like, oh, thank God for that.
Yeah.
It's like you can breathe because that whole thing of where... I call it my gut churn of where I'm going to go. Because I know where I want to go. And then I just get to this moment where I'm like, I need to go from this to this, but it's all got to flow. And I write chapters and chapters and chapters sometimes where I delete and rewrite, because I just want to get that scene perfect where the story sort of pivots, you know?
Yeah.
And
sometimes I'll watch, go ahead.
It takes me weeks and then I'll watch something or listen to a song.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, yes, let's go.
Sometimes, like, I was having trouble finishing a book and I was binge watching this television series on Amazon Prime. And it wasn't even like the television series, but the soundtrack was so good. And so I like went to Spotify and like listened to the soundtrack and I was like, oh, this is what's going to help me finish this book. It's just this entire television soundtrack. And it did. It is so good. I do that all the time. I'll like listen to the soundtracks and be like, yes, this is amazing.
So there is like one song. No, there's two songs that I tend to go to for like, I call it my pissed moments where I'm so angry and I'm like, my characters are that angry. And it's it's the Ramsey song. Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot the name. It's like my most listened to song in the last 3 years.
What is it?
Oh, my phone isn't even here. I want to see you bleed. I just want to see you
okay,
bleed. Oh, my God. That song just, every single time that I'm stuck in like a scene or the scene really needs to be brutal, that's what I go to.
Yes.
And then there is another one. So for like my steamy, slow scenes, I love Teddy Flames. I just love that song.
I'm gonna have to read.
You've got to listen to it because it's just got that, you know, that slow, you know,
sexy
vibe. But the lyrics are great as well. And
when I was writing my romance, I literally at the end of every single book, right? It did not matter, like the last chapter, I always listen to Iris by the Cougar Dolls, because that's like, to me, that's the perfect like book ending song. Like it's like when the characters are running towards each other in the rain and they're in love and and they can confess their undying love for each other. I love it. It gives me such a vibe. I can't.
But that song is like a smooch in itself. You know, it's like that
literally, it literally says I would give up forever to touch you. Yeah. Like what? Like, that is the most iconic line in a song ever. I love it.
My biggest angst anthem is Astronomical by Svesina.
I love that song.
Yeah.
I love it.
So that was Christopher and Arabella's song. I played that song on repeat throughout most of their book. That, and then there was another one. There was Kiss Me, but it's not Ninepence. It's it's Rob Something. But the beat to that and the lyrics are just so good, because it's all about, you know, going back to how things were. Mm-hmm. And that first kiss where everything is like all hopeful and then everything falls to shit, but you always want to go back. You know?
I love it. Love that. Sure. All right. So do you have any, like, you're fine. This is like the whole point of the podcast. So do you have any interesting writing quirks? Like, when you sit down to write, do you have to like be eating Twizzlers or like wearing a certain pair of socks or something like that?
Not really. No, I just, I write on a schedule because I've got two boys in school. So for me, it's a bit like I have, if I don't get the majority, I've got hiccups. I get really bad hiccups when I'm pregnant. You're and fine. They just come up at any time. It's just the one here and there. but if I don't get the majority of my writing done when they're at school, when they get home, I just can't concentrate.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people where I zone out. I literally zone out from everything. Mm-hmm. But if they're at home with me, obviously, it's a big responsibility to zone out with two boys that, yeah, you know, climb cupboards and have nerf fights and yeah. So it's, for me, my quirk is just getting up early and just getting sitting down, getting it done, hammering out, yeah, the words.
Listen, that works. That's
so
a quirk.
Yeah,
that's fine, that works. It's a quirk, it works, but everybody's different.
That and coffee.
I love coffee. Coffee is the food of the soul, that drink of the soul.
So, honestly, the hardest thing in being pregnant, you would think it'd be like the booze or, you know, the things that you can't really have, like sushi and things like that. No, no. For me, it's just coffee. Having proper caffeinated coffee. I'm onto one a day. And that first cup of coffee that I have to have the proper coffee, caffeinated stuff, you know, the good stuff. Mm-hmm. I have to have, when I get home from doing the school run, dropping the boys off at school, because I have to sit down and I just have to enjoy it because it's my only coffee for the day. And then after that, yeah, caffeinated rubbish, just like toilet water. but yeah, so coffee and just sitting down and actually doing it. Like, I don't know, like I have days like today where it's just been so crazy for me and I haven't been able to sit down and write, but you know, I've got a release coming up. I'm recovering the first books in the Imperfect Heart series. So that means formatting as well. You know, it's a lot and you just, yeah, need to get everything done. So like today I just did admin. I count that's my admin. And you know, so I didn't write, but I don't know about you, but I have days where if I don't write or if I'm in a place where I can't be writing, I always have the best ideas for that, yeah, story.
Literally. It's like, why can this not happen when I am literally have the time and sitting in front of a computer? Like, what?
But I'll sit there for hours sometimes and I'm literally like staring at my screen, forcing myself to write. And, you know, I get to the end of it and I just close my Mac and I'm just like, I'm done. I need to walk away. Goodbye. I will delete you tomorrow. And sometimes it's actually really silly because I read back through it and I'm like, oh, this actually makes sense. It's actually good stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, I have those days and it really irks me because I don't know. I give myself deadlines. Even before I announce release dates, I just give myself deadlines because I like having something to work towards.
If I don't give myself deadlines, I won't do it. I have to give myself some type of like motivation.
I will sit there, I will sit on my computer, and I will basically live on Pinterest and Instagram.
Yep, me too. I have to give myself some type of pressure so that I can like finish it, because I won't if I don't.
And like, I used to use Scrivener and
I love
it. Scrivener really irritated me. I don't know why, it just irritated me. I just couldn't, I gave up on it.
Why?
Well, now I use Dabble.
No, I love Scrivener. I live and die by Scrivener. You should see how, like, if you saw how, like, intricate my Scrivener looks right now, oh my God. Oh my God. I have, like, every single character profile, like, every character has a profile. Even the bad guys. Places all have character profiles. I have, like, notes for, like, pieces of, like, different sections. I have a research section. I have, like, template sheets. All of my front matter's already done. I have my manuscript sectioned off into different categories. Like, it is intense.
Oh, see, but you sound like you're a Scrivener queen. I was not a Scrivener queen. I still do a lot of my notes on pen and paper, and then I like flicking through and, you know, scribbling things, and then sometimes I'm halfway through a scene and I get an idea for a conversation that needs to happen a few chapters ahead, so I need to write that down. And I even use notes on my phone. You know, sometimes I'm in bed and I can't sleep, so obviously I'm there. I don't know about you, but like, if I wake up during the night and I can't sleep, I think about what I'm writing. And I have whole conversations, like, in my head. I have whole entire conversations. And then I'm like, whilst I'm, you know, thinking of those conversations and having them, I'm also picturing what's happening. So then I'm thinking, this is going to save me so much time when it comes to writing it. So I get my phone out and I'm doing it. And then Kane, my other half, wakes up. It's like, what are you doing on the phone? I'm sorry, I had an idea. I have to write it. He's like, can you please just go to sleep? Yes, I know, I will do it. And then an hour later, he wakes up again. It's like, you're still on your phone. I'm like, yes, but you don't understand, it's going so well.
Yeah.
And then my fingers cramp as well. So like, my fingers are stuck in.
I think that Scrivener works for me because I'm a plotter. Like, I'm a plotter through and through. So I think that's why Scrivener works for me, because I have an outline section.
I plot my co-written books.
Yeah. Okay.
Every co-write, like, that I've done with Sophie has had a plot from start to finish. It's got a map, you know, it's got detailed bullet points of what needs to happen in that chapter. And, you know, so if I'm co-writing with Sophie, I need that. Like, the two of us need that.
Yeah.
And it's what makes, I think, co-writing even go quite quickly. You know, you just, people say, oh, it's because, you know, it's two people doing the work, but actually it's not. You still have to put as much work into a co-write as you would into a solo. There's no cutting that in half. But it's, if you have if it's plotted out, we just stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly until I text her and go, I'm really sorry, but we have to go in and change it because I've done this and that. And she's like, oh my God, not again. Why do you always do this?
Love it.
So yeah, like plotting. Listen, I've discovered Dabble and I love Dabble now. It's a bit like Scrivener, but it's got like, it's, you know, like in Scrivener, you have like the sticky notes.
Yeah.
It's not so much like that. So it gives you like a plot and then it gives you scene ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then it splits those scene ideas into chapters and stuff. It's great. I love it. Like, since I've been using it, like, it's been great because I'm actually able to focus on what I'm meant to be writing. Because although I don't plot, I still have an idea and I sort of get those ideas down and flesh them out.
Yeah.
That's how. Yeah.
And whatever.
Sorry, I digressed there.
No, you're fine. Whatever, you know, makes it work. All right. So what's the weirdest thing that you've ever had to Google for a book?
How to decompose a human body in under 24 hours in a bathtub.
Okay. All right. Listen, that's not even bad. I do that too. Except mine was like, can, so my question was, can you flush a body that has been dissolved in acid down the toilet without it like melting the ceramic of the toilet? Like, and the answer to that question through multiple Google searches is no, because even though the acid has been neutralized by blood and bone and tissue, it's still acidic enough to melt the lining of your toilet. So don't do that. That is that information for the day.
Oh, damn, there goes my, you know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. Because, I mean, I knew how to dissolve a body in acid. Like, I had known that from, like, previous things that I had learned in life. But, yeah, I didn't know you couldn't flush it. So, now you know.
I also Googled how to cause an embolism through air in a syringe.
Oh my God, yes.
And it's sort of like, it's like all about how much air is in the syringe and how fast you do it. And oh my God, I was just like, this is so technical. I was like, if you're trying to murder someone, how the hell do you do it so quickly like they do in the movies? And it just goes zoop and it's done. But it's not like that, because it needs to be bubbles of air. It can't just be a whole stream of air. It has to be a whole bubble. But oh my God, yeah.
Hollywood makes things look so much easier than it actually is.
I know. I know.
Like, it's, you know, so cars don't actually blow up. Like, no, I swear to God. I swear to God. I was about to write this scene. I have this group of friends that I've been friends with since we were in elementary school, and it's a group of guys. And I have a Snapchat group message called 1,000 Ways to Die. And anytime that Google is not giving me the answer that I'm looking for, I will message them and be like, hey, I have a question about, you know, like, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, I need the car to blow up. And my friend Noah was like, actually, Hollywood makes it look a lot crazier than it actually is. Like, it won't actually blow up unless you shoot directly in the gas tank. Like, people don't just, like, you can't just, like, shoot the side of a car and it blows up. And I was like, but why not? But why not?
Yeah.
He was like, no, you have to shoot the gas tank and then it will blow up.
So I don't know how happy he's going to be about me telling this story, but, you know, he's not here, so, and he won't, you know, listen, so it's all good. So Kane, when he was in school, he had this teacher that he really didn't like. Mm-hmm. And another teacher also didn't like that teacher. So, and he happened to be a science teacher, and he taught Kane how to make a exhaust pipe bomb.
Oh my God.
So obviously he did it. And stuffed it in this teacher's exhaust pipe. And he was like, it was so impressive because literally the engine just went boom.
Oh my God. I feel like this is so illegal.
Well, yes, it is. It's been a while though since he's done it. You know, it's been, you know, he's in his 40s now. So, you know, he can't even be prosecuted for it. So it's all good. But I'm pretty certain he's going to be like, why would you tell that story of all stories?
I love that. I love that though.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, Hollywood's just so full of bullshit.
Literally.
And then you think, and then you're writing your book and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, I've got this. I saw this happen. And then you actually do the research. You're like, oh, that's not
how it actually can happen. Yeah, that's how I feel. That's really how I feel. I wish it was that easy, but apparently it's not. So moving to reading questions, what book has your favorite cover? This could be yours or anybody else's.
I really like, and I feel like a broken disc, because I think I've spoken about this book so much. So Melanie Harlow has a series called Cloverleaf Farms.
Okay.
And the book Unforgettable. I just love the cover.
I haven't seen it. Hold on, let me look. I'm looking it up.
Listen, I have an obsession with Sebastian York and Maxine. Oh God, what's her name now? Maxine something. And they did the audiobook for Unforgettable. And oh, when I found out, I was like, I need to read all of the
Oh my God, all the series is so pretty.
I know. they're just like, they just have all like the feels.
I love it.
But basically, I read that whole series just for that one book, and it was the very last book. I was over the moon. And now she's got a whole second generation one series, and I'm literally like dying to get into it. But the thing is, like, where I've been writing a contemporary romance, I don't want to read contemporary romance because I don't know, like, I always get paranoid that I'm going to read something, and then as I'm writing, something's going to come to me and it's going to be very similar. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. I do the same thing.
So I'd never read what I'm writing, if that makes sense.
I do the same thing. Same thing.
But apart from that, Pepper Winters.
I love
her. Her covers are always amazing.
So stunning. I love Pepper Winters. Love her.
Like, I just love her. I love her covers. I love her books. Everything.
So what attracts you to a book? Like, what will make you pick up a book? The cover, a blurb, or recommendations for others, from others?
This is going to be really bad because obviously I ask everyone for reviews. but I don't really read reviews. Just because I feel like, you know, there have been so many books where I haven't read it because I've read this review and it wasn't a great review. And sometimes, you know, even like you read a 5-star review, but there's certain things in that review that sort of makes you think, oh, I wouldn't like that. It doesn't have to be a bad review. It can be a great review, but the way that person's portrayed the story, you sort of go, oh no, not for me.
Yeah.
And then at some point later on, I've gone back and I've read that book and I'm like, I freaking love it so much. Oh, why did I read the reviews and blah, blah, blah. So I don't read the reviews. The first thing that gets my attention, and this is because of Instagram.
Yeah.
The cover.
Absolutely. Oh my God. I love a good cover. I will literally buy a random cover just because the cover's beautiful. I do it all the time.
Do you ever have a moment where, like, you go and you're just going through Instagram, you see that cover, you click on it, and you read the blurb, and then you're like, do I, because the blurb isn't really cool to you, but that cover, and you just, it's just got all these feels, and you've, oh yeah, I have that all the time.
That's why I don't even read the blurb, I just buy it,
I need to do. I need to stop reading the blurbs because the cover is the first thing and then I always read the blurb. Just because, I don't know.
And well, then what you're supposed to do.
Well, yeah. And the worst part is that then I'm like, I have this horrible non-buying regret.
Yeah.
It's not even buyer's regret. You know, I don't care because that's already on my Kindle. It's too late, you know. You can't return it. It's all good. But it's when I walk away and then I keep seeing that cover and then I've got non-buyer's regret.
I feel that. Have you seen the cover for Bully God, the anthology?
Mm-hmm.
I literally got it in the mail. This thing is God. So freaking, it's
goofy.
But it is so pretty. It is so pretty.
I really, really love that.
The internal like formatting too. Oh my God. It's just like, it's, I can't.
Oh, that's really pretty.
Actually. It's so good. Oh my God. And then also, so I got book mail yesterday. So I don't know if you know who Saffron Kent is, but she's one of my dearest friends. I love her with my entire heart. And I have all of her books on my shelf. Go ahead.
Her book, her very first book, A War
Like Us. Yeah. Like ours. Yeah.
Yeah. Was the second book that I ever reviewed.
Oh my God. I hope
I adore her.
I love Saffron. She's the sweetest person in the whole world. And I have it's all
just because the characters are so fucked up.
Oh yeah. They're beautiful though. I love them all.
But the love story, like they're so messed up in themselves. But the love that they have inside them at the same time, it's just unsurmountable. It's just, oh, when you like, she gives you the whole experience when you read her books.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I love. Like,
oh, yeah. So she was one of the very first authors that I loved, that I fell in love with within romance.
And she's one of the sweetest people in the whole world. I love her. I'm glad we're friends. And she, I have all of her like paperbacks, right? And she got like a book. She's doing a book box right now for the St. Mary's Rebels. And she sent me the first like hardback cover for it. When I tell you that I acted, hold up, first of all, and I got her boyfriend right here. Hold up. I got it right here because I was showing my significant other. I was like, you got to look at them together, though. They're beautiful.
They really are. That
and then girl have cover. Snowflake thing is on the side.
With the edges.
I know. It's stunning. And then, like, there's a, hold up, let me find it because it's, like, right here at the front. Like, these little chapter things.
Oh, so my very, the No One But You paperback on the back, that's the image on there. I love that image. I don't know what it is. I just love the whole, you know, the girl's feet.
She's a ballerina. So it's adorable. It makes it even better. Oh my God. I was like, I love you so much for this. This is beautiful. But yeah, so I got book mail. So I was going to show this cover off, but I love it. It's stunning. All right. Sorry. So what are some of your favorite authors to read?
Let's start with where we just finished. Oh my gosh, she is great. I don't know. There is just something so stunning about the way she writes, like with Medicine Man. And that could have been like really, that could have been a very precarious story.
Mm-hmm.
But the way she's done it, and also that scene, you know, when he goes into her room, and I'm just like,
I fainted. I was like, stop right now. I was like, stop. I was like, Simon, please.
Do you know when you have like that whole thing where you're there going, come on, give me the good stuff? Like this angst, I can't hold on anymore. I just want the good stuff.
And yeah, yeah.
To it. And you're just like, shit. I needed some warning for that, some more preparation.
I literally how I felt the whole time. I don't know if you've read Bad Boy Blues. It's one of my favorite stories that she's ever wrote.
I haven't read it yet. It's on my Kindle. And I haven't read, I'm really upset with myself. I didn't get the chance to read her last series, St. Mary's Rebels. But I need to, I've got all of them. The thing is, like, I pre-order everything the minute I can.
I love Arrow. He is the most dirty talking hero she has ever, he is filthy. And I love that. I love a dirty talker. They're really, all of them are really good. They're so good. And she's working on the last one right now. And
I don't think she can write a bad book.
No, I don't think she can either. The way she writes is so poetic. Like, it's just, I don't know. It just, like, sucks me in and it doesn't let me go. Yeah. And it's great. I love it. It makes me want to go reread her things.
She's got, like, that same sort of, like, it's that poeticism that Sierra has.
Yes.
Just like, it's just something that's so natural and unique to them.
I love it.
And you know, when you pick up one of their books, you're going to be taken to a different world, even if it isn't, you know, a fantasy or whatever, even if it is the real world and it's not perfect, but you just know you're going to get swept away and you're going to fall in love no matter what your morals say.
Exactly. And I love it.
So Saffron, Sierra, Simone, I love. Pepper Winters, just indebted series. Jesus Christ, yes, Jethro. I also liked Throne of Lies.
Okay, yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. I like Melanie Harlow. Because I think that she writes sweet, but in a quirky way.
Yeah.
So I really like her as well. And it's really hard because I'm not someone that reads a lot of, just give me one second. You're fine. I'm not someone that reads new adult much, but I love Trelina's new adult stuff.
I love Trelina,
her new adult stuff. Like, I always loved The Mafia. Like, to me it was incredible.
I loved her Vicious, you know, Little Snakes. I Will Live and Die by Liam and Caroline. Right? Oh my God, I love them.
And again, it was because they were so messed up in themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So they were just like, they just completed each other.
Care Bear makes me want to literally die. I love them. I literally love them.
I absolutely adore them. So they're like Trilina. I love her stuff. Whether she's writing Mafia, New Adult, I think she just always has a way of bringing the heat and the emotions without it being contrived, if that makes sense.
I agree. All right, so we are going to shift to trope questions. This is the last section of the podcast, but these are some of our favorite questions. So what is one trope you would eventually like to write and why?
Do you know what? Oh,
you got to say it.
I would like to try a reverse harem.
I'm doing that next.
Just because I've never done it, and I've always wondered, like, I've heard some authors say it's like the shiz. They're like, once you start writing it, you just don't want to go back to writing normal couples. You just want to write, you know, reverse harem. And I'd like to try that at one point, but I don't know, because I'm so, I just don't know.
I'm doing it next. I'm excited. Do it. We'll do it at the same time. Do it. All right. So what is one trope you'll never write and why?
Oh, dear. Incest.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I feel like it crosses the line of taboo a little. Like, listen, I love a good stepbrother romance. I can't even lie. But I guess.
Read it, though. Like, The Wild, I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I loved The Wild by Kay Webster. Like, yes.
I haven't read it yet, but I hear it's good.
It's really hard to go into it, because when I first read it was when there was the whole thing about the relationship going on. Mm-hmm. And I remember the PR company that sent me the art copy, they sent an email saying, you don't have to review this anymore. You don't even have to read it if you don't want to, whatever. And I'm really stubborn. So it was on my Kindle and I said I was going to do it. So I was like, I signed up for it. I'm doing it. And honestly, I really enjoyed it. I just went in and I just ignored everything that had ever been said. And I really enjoyed it. Was not expecting to enjoy it, but I really did. And there was another one.
I'll try everything once. I don't even care.
There is one that she did where the characters are actually brother and sister. And I really enjoyed that.
I don't even care. Listen, it's fine. I do too. Like, I don't think I could personally ever write it, but I mean, yeah. I love it. I love reading it. It's good. I don't care.
Do you know what it is? It's the thrill of like just going against all your morals.
Literally.
It's like, I'm a bad girl. Yes. Give me more. But I just don't think I could write it.
I agree. I couldn't.
Because I couldn't put myself in, when I write, I have to be able to put myself in the character's shoes.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do that. So.
Agreed. I couldn't either. All right. So this is our last question. If you were in a book, what trope would you want for your story?
Jesus.
All of it.
Just throw it all at me. Just throw it all at me. It's what I do when I write. I just throw it all in. I don't know. If I wasn't a character in the book, I'd want to be in a dark romance. That's all I can say. It'd have to be dark. It would have to be a dark romance. The dirtier, the more volatile and bloody, the better. It had to be sinister as well.
I want to be in a reverse harem. That's my trope. It's sticking to that trope, reverse harem all the way. I want that trope.
I just I I really do want to write it, but I think it's one of those things that you have to, well, I have to psych myself up for.
You got it. I'll psych you up. I'll mess with you every day and be like, you got this. You've got this. I'm going to psych you up for it. All right. So that is our last question for you. You've been such a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us. You've been great. I'm going to leave you a few minutes here to talk about an upcoming release or sale and let our listeners know where to find you. The floor is yours. Take it away.
Well, I'm just going to fighting fake. It's not my usual arc. It's funny. It's got some of my usual dark elements in, but you're guaranteed a good time. So Fight and Fate is out Monday today, if you're listening to this.
Yeah.
So go get it. And it's wide up until midnight, Monday 28th of February, and then it's in Kindle Unlimited.
Exciting. I'm super excited for you. Like I said, thank you for coming on and we hope to chat
with you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, hold up.